This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Earners, what's up? Look, today I want to talk to you about something that's been on my mind, a real weight on my shoulders. You know, we all have these moments, big or small, that just stick with us. When we don't talk about these things, then they can start to affect our lives in unexpected ways. That's why having a space to express these feelings is so important. I know firsthand the benefits of therapy. It's been transformative for my friends and family. Therapy can help you learn crucial skills like setting boundaries and developing coping strategies. It's not just about dealing with major events. It's also about enhancing your day-to-day life, allowing you to become the best version of yourself. So if you've been thinking about therapy, BetterHelp can be a great option for you. It's entirely online, which makes it super convenient and adaptable to your busy schedule. You start by filling out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And you can even switch therapists at any time if you feel the need without any additional cost. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/earnyourleisure today to get 10% off your first month. Remember, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/earnyourleisure. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Head over there now. Earners, what's up? Look, I want to give y'all a little peek behind the curtain of producing Earn Your Leisure. It's a lot more than just sitting down and chatting. It involves meticulous planning, recording, editing, and then promoting each episode to ensure it reaches all of you. And if you picked up any of our merch, then you know there's a whole extra layer of logistics from inventory management to shipping. Running a podcast is like running a small business. And speaking of business, I know many of you entrepreneurs are involved in e-commerce. You understand how crucial it is to streamline operations and cut costs wherever possible. That's why I want to talk to you about ShipStation, the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates seamlessly with all your online sales channels. It's all about optimizing your shipping, connecting with expert partners, and freeing up more of your time to focus on scaling your business. Now let's talk about our experience with ShipStation. This tool has been a game changer for us, especially with automating routine tasks. Being able to manage everything from one dashboard and print shipping labels with just a click, absolute lifesavers. Plus, the discounts we get on shipping costs are incredible. Honestly, it feels like we're saving thousands. And as our show and merch sales have grown, ShipStation's robust automation and reporting features have helped us keep up without missing a beat. For those of you who get overwhelmed by order volumes, ShipStation's easy-to-use dashboard is a dream come true. You can import orders from any sales channel, apply shipping preferences automatically, and handle customer service issues right there. Not to mention the savings with up to 89% off carrier rates like UPS, DHL Express, and USPS. It's no wonder over 130,000 companies stick with ShipStation long term. So, are you ready to turn your shipping challenges into growth opportunities? Head over to ShipStation.com and use promo code EARN for a free 60-day trial. Again, that's ShipStation.com, promo code EARN. Start streamlining your shipping and scaling your business today.
All right, guys. Welcome back. EYL, LA, Hometown Heroes Edition.
That's a fact.
Yeah, shout out to Los Angeles. We are sheltering in place in the great city of LA. One of my favorite places in the whole entire world.
Respectfully.
Absolutely. So while we out on the West Coast for the summer, we definitely, planned on getting a lot of content done. So this is the first of hopefully many episodes that we will be recording while we are in Los Angeles with West Coast natives. And this is very rare to actually meet somebody from LA or the greater LA area, because everybody that's in LA is like from somewhere else. Like you meet them, they're like from Toronto or Chicago or Houston. Everybody comes to LA from different places, but Ernest Dukes is actually from the OC, which is close enough.
That's LA, right?
Southern California, the LA, the greater LA area. And he's a really superstar in the game of being a publicist and a TV producer. And it's actually crazy because I just found out. So I was talking to MG, the mortgage guy. If you're a loyal listener of Earn Your Leisure, you know who Matt is. He's a close friend of ours and one of our most prestigious alumni. So MG the mortgage guy, I'm talking to him like a few weeks ago, and he's like, yeah, DJ Envy hooked me up with this publicist. So I'm thinking about, you know what I'm saying, working with a publicist. So I'm like, yeah, he's like, and the publicist told me, he was like, well, you know, have you heard of this podcast called Earn Your Leisure? Like, you should try to get on that podcast. And he was like, I'm the best episode on Earn Your Leisure.
By the way.
he was like, if you want to earn your leisure, you already... He's like, yeah, I made them go in the top 10. Da, 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 da.
Yo, he did say that.
That is true. That part is true.
So as fate would have it, shout out to our guy Ladoon, another EYL alumni.
Yep.
My God versus My Enemies. He hooked it up with our partner Mike to get us our first interview in LA with, like I said, Ernest Dukes, who is a publicist. And it's actually interesting because we haven't talked to a publicist yet. Mm-hmm. We haven't talked to a TV producer yet. So I'll run down. He has a long list of accomplishments, but he's the owner of a marketing and PR company called the Nottingham Group. Mm-hmm. He represents a lot of celebrity clients. Some of them are Jeezy, Remy Ma, Fashion Nova, Keisha Cole, Lala Milan. Some of his past clients were Nick Cannon, K. Michelle, Scott Storz, Tammy Roman, 112. And he has a bunch of stuff going. He has annual business and branding workshops that he does once a year. I believe once a year. Mm-hmm. Called Earnest Living Tour, where he's had guests like Mona Scott, Tyson Beckford. He also has a book that he is the author of called Caption God, which talks about 500 captions on social media to increase engagement. And he has a web series called Black Publicists Working. So this is going to be a very informative, educational episode.
I didn't even know.
And it's perfect that we in Hollywood, the perfect place to do it. So first and foremost, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you all for having me. I appreciate y'all.
Appreciate you. Now, we can have Shadi do this for you, like, for the rest of your career.
I'm here for it. Like, when he was talking, I'm like, who's he talking to? That's me.
We're open to that.
Yo, side note, I'm so jealous of y'all because when I did my tour, the Earnest Living Tour, I really wanted to call my people. You know, they have like the old fans or whatever,
yeah,
or like the community. I'm like, I want to call them the earners.
And oh.
I'm like, here's some shit.
Shout out to all the earners.
Out to the earners.
Yeah, that sounds good. We're going to use that as a drop.
So, all right, so let's start at the beginning because I'm interested in this because, like I said, we actually thought about hiring a publicist.
I just told him when we were in Chicago, saw Mandy, shout out to Mandy, another alumni, and I was like, yo, Mandy, we were watching her go to all these events, and we would look like, yo, we need a publicist. We need to be in these events.
Yeah.
And she was kind of like, why you need it? And I gave her a bunch of reasons, and she was like, nah, you guys are great where you are. You know, just see how far you can go without it first, and then if you really need it.
What were the reasons, though, that you told her?
Number one was like, look, we need to be in events that other people are in. We need a little bit more notoriety. We hadn't had any press, really. And she was like, I'm not sure that's what a publicist does. I think you need to figure out the roles first. And then we had another conversation. She was like, keep going the way you're going. I like the way you guys are doing this. And we'll talk later. And we haven't talked about it since. But when you said that one of the episodes that you listened to was Mandy, I'm like,
yeah,
that's ironic because she had this conversation with me about the publicist position.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right. So before we even start, How do you get started in being a publicist? I mean, you're in the best city, LA, for that. But you never worked with an agency. You was always independent, you told me. So you just, like, run down on people? Like, hey, let me get you in the magazine?
Cool. I've never been that person. So, all right, so let me start from the beginning. Growing up, it's going to sound super funny and corny. I wanted to do acting when I was a kid, like a teenager. And so I would come from Orange County to LA, and I would always do these acting classes. Mm-hmm. And at the time, like, a lot of the people that I was hanging out with have become successful to this day. Like, coming up, like, I would run around like Kiki Palmer's and like Quincy and Kofi from Queen Sugar on OWN. And so by hanging out with them, I would always get invited to events. And so one day I got invited to some event, and I saw Jackie Christie, who's on Basketball Wives. And so she was super nice. She was on the red carpet, and she was sweating, so I was fanning her. And, you know, I'm like, hey, I'm trying to look out for you, because it was sweating, right? And so when I was finished and she was done doing her interview, she gave me $100. And she's like, here's some change. And I'm like, some change? Like, at the time, I was broke as hell, so I'm like, what can I do for some more change, right?
Yeah.
So every time I would go out and I would see her, I always try to be nice and cordial because I wanted to get some more change.
You brought the fan with you?
Nah, I was like, what you need? Like, I would have, though, you know? And so she asked me, like, who's your publicist? Because you are always at the same events that I'm at. And I didn't know what a publicist was. And so I'm like, well, shit, I guess it's me because no one else is here. And so she's like, if I pay you, can you get me into events? And I'm like, yeah, perfect, because it was some pay involved. Mm-hmm. And I, again, wasn't making money. And so from there, her and her husband had written a book called No Ordinary Love. It was they co-authored it together. And then Basketball Wives happened. And on that show, there was nobody, none of those women had publicists. They didn't even know what a publicist was. Like, you know, think about it. Like, you're just a wife or a girlfriend, and all of a sudden you're on television. You don't know what to do. And so they saw Jackie had a publicist, and so they all started hiring me. So like season one, like I worked with Malaysia and Laura Govan and like all these different women, and then it just kept going from there, and I became like the reality show publicist.
So she had a sister, right? Laura?
Yeah, Gloria.
So you had both of them?
No, I just had Laura. They weren't getting along, so it...
Oh, okay.
And that's another thing I realized too quickly, that those women are so competitive that it didn't really help me to like represent everybody, because everyone... Like, for example, when I had Laura and Malaysia, they got into a fist fight. Ooh. So it's like, what do you do? Like, what do you, you know, how do
who
you...
Who won?
No, I was well, legend. I think it's on WorldStar. You can go check it out. They both have hands, though, I could tell you from what I saw. But, yeah, and then from there, I started doing all the reality shows. I got people on Love & Hip Hop. I got Hollywood Exes on VH1, Mob Wives. And, like, again, becoming the reality star guy, it was looked down upon. Yeah. Like, oh, you just do reality. Because at that time, no one cared about reality stars. It's like, oh, who cares? And then, but it's funny that people look down on me for having reality stars, because that's what actually got me my job at Fashion Nova. Mm. They saw value in reality talent as influencers. Like before influencers were really a thing, it was like the reality people they would pay. And so I had so many of them, they hired me to do the PR for Fashion Nova. And that's really what people started treating me different after that. It was like, you work at Fashion Nova? You know, this, I started dressing, you know, money changed.
Fashion Nova men.
Yeah, so all because of reality TV, really.
That's great. So you got all these clients in season one. I'm still thinking to myself, what actually does a publicist do, right?
Yeah, I was thinking that too at the time, because I never went to college for PR.
Yeah.
Like, really, I interned for a bunch of people. I don't really feel like I learned what to do. I learned what not to do, because, like, there were those people I interned for, with the exception of one woman, her name was Chanel Green, were all kind of just using me to, like, do things for them. Like, I wasn't learning nothing. It was like... And that's what I tell people about internships. Like, you got to really figure out, like, if the internship is in alignment with your vision. Because, like, me running to get you coffee every day is not going to ever propel me to where I want to go. Mm-hmm. I know how to get coffee. I know how to, you know, look at me. I can eat. You know, I know how to order and Uber Eats and all that. So, like, literally, it didn't help me at all. And so I started taking, like, classes. Like, you know, online classes or watching YouTube videos. I think I have a PhD in Google.
I guess you know.
Google University.
Yeah, like
Google
top
University.
Of my class.
Yeah.
And I used to steal, but like not like steal. Like, you know, I didn't like stick nobody up. But I would go to this bookstore called Borders Bookstores. I don't know if they still have them, but they used to have the price tag on the back of the book. It was a sticker. And so I would go like in the children's book section and get like Clifford the Big Red Dog, and it was $4. And I would take that sticker off and put it on the back of like The Art of Publicity. That was $60. It had like a CD-ROM in the back before there was apps and stuff. And I would go and like pay for that. So I was stealing, but like still trying to, you know, have a good heart with it.
Pledge allegiance to the Scramblers.
You know what I'm saying? and that's kind of like how I learned. But yeah, I can't even remember what the original question was. I started thinking about stealing and going to jail.
I think he was saying like, what's the actual role?
What's the actual role of a publicist? In the beginning, I didn't know, like I said. So I kind of operated as a best friend for hire. Like, these women would call and be like, oh, my husband's cheating on me. And I'd be on the phone like, what happened? You know, John 3:16 said, like, you know, giving them scriptures.
John 3:16.
You know, I'm serious. Cause I'm thinking like, this is what you're supposed to do.
This is what you need, this you healing. Know, come get this healing.
Like, I'm doing everything else. You know, I'm fixing shit and getting them pressed. So I really didn't know in the beginning, but now I have like really learned and mastered the art of it. So what I would say, a publicist, like, I am in charge of how the public consumes your image or your brand or your project. So for different people, I do different things. Some people come to me for branding, which is like I'm involved with your overall like look of your brand, everything that you, I guess, accumulate under your brand. So for example, like Tammy Roman, when I started working with her, she was on Basketball Wives. She had just hit somebody in the face. I forget which season it was. But she hit somebody and she's like, I don't need to clean my image. Like, they're saying I'm a bully. And I'm like, all right, cool, let's figure this out. So we went and did press. And all different markets, were in Atlanta, New York, LA, of course, like really trying to show like a different side of her that people don't see on the TV show. And then from there and getting to know her, I realized she was funny and she was doing her Bonnet Chronicles. She was on Instagram talking and really blowing up on Instagram for that. And so I'm like, well, what more can we do? So together her and I created an app called Tamotions. It was like the first talking emoji.
Mm-hmm.
We're number one in the app store. We beat Kim Kardashian. We ain't really making no money from it. That's another story. But we beat her. And then from there, we kept growing. So we did the scripted series on Tidal, Bonnet Chronicles. Mm-hmm. We did stand-up comedy where I co-write the jokes with her. And that would be more of an example of branding. But then there are some people who just come strictly for publicity. like Scott Storch, he was producing the single for Chris Brown and Rick Ross. All he wanted was to do interviews and talk about it. So I set up his press tour, we did all that stuff, and then when it was over, I got my check, he went along his way, and I ain't seen him since. You know, so a shorter answer, just like, I guess, put a button on it, is like anything from, anytime you see an artist do like magazine interviews or red carpets or anything that has to do with press, like the publicist is there to facilitate that.
So is it based off of a relationship? So it's like, all right, I want to go on a press tour, right? And I just put a new book out. I want to go to Breakfast Club. I want to go to, you know, Big Boy in the Morning. I want to go to Earn Your Leisure.
That's a big check.
Big.
Sounds like a nice check. Retainer. Big check. Where else you want to go?
So
I'm like adding numbers in my head. One, dividing the two.
So how do you, all right, how do you make that happen? Is it like relationships that you've built with these people, or do you just kind of cold call? Like how?
It can happen one of two ways. So I think a lot of, when I first started in PR, there weren't a lot of publicists, like, and not a lot of black ones or males at that point, at, for that matter. And then over the years, I think it's become cool and trendy, so now so many people do it. And so those people are just getting in it. They would do like a cold call or like an email or send a pitch letter and hope for the best.
Yeah.
If you have a client that is of interest, they're going to call you back. You know, like let's say I work with Gabrielle Union. Of course they're going to call me back. It's Gabrielle Union.
Yeah.
I don't think that really shows like how great of a publicist you are because the talent's name is big. I'm always more impressed like when somebody can get like you know Joe Jones?
No.
Exactly. So when you can get Joe Jones on those platforms, that's when I'm impressed. I'm like, how you get this? How you get him over there? You know, no one knows him, so that's impressive. But for me, I did start that way, like not having any big names and really having to, like really trying to persuade people. And really, it's all about relationships. So now I can like text someone at the Breakfast Club, like, hey, can you have my person come on, or like, because I work with Nick Cannon, I can text them, say, hey, can someone come on your morning show or whatever. But I was able to build relationships by investing in myself. So here's what people don't realize. When I say I work with reality clients, they don't make a lot of money. So it's not like I was making tons of bread working with them. I was making, literally, I'll tell you what I was making. When I first started with Jackie Christie, she would pay me $50 for every interview I can get her. Which is crazy. Like, no one's fucking working for $50. But at the time, like, you don't understand how dead broke I was. So I'm like, $50? I had her interviewing with every WordPress blog or Blogspot blog or internet radio. I'm like, you got an interview here, interview there. And she would do it. That's bad, though, for anybody listening. Like, you, like, less is more to me. Like, you want quality instead of quantity. But at the time, it was like, I wanted the 50 per placement. And then from there, I'm like, I'm going to charge everybody $1,000 a month. I'm going to be rich. Realize I would never be rich making $1,000 a month. Especially because going back to your point and building relationships, I would use that money to invest in myself. So like if I got someone an interview on the Breakfast Club and I'm in LA, they barely could afford the $1,000 a month. They're not going to afford to fly me in. So I would take the $1,000 they gave me and fly myself in and put myself up just so I can put a face to the name when I meet these people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I really wasn't making nothing, but I think in the long term it paid off because I have so many relationships. Like I can navigate through pretty much any city now because I've been there so many times with so many clients, and now I'm to the point where people fly me in, and it's not even like I'm in coach or in the middle seat. Like I get first class. Like I have a I hate like a rider, humbly speaking. But it's all because of like the investment I made in myself, you know.
So your pay is based on the placement. So the higher the placement.
No, my pay now is based on my name. Honestly. I think I always tell people, like a lot of people reach out to me and I had to like really like tap into my discernment and discerning like, is this somebody I should work with or is this somebody who's just trying to chase clout? Like I've had people who've hired me and don't even have any expectations from me other than for me to put them on my page and say I represent them or for them to say like, oh yeah, my publicist does Fashion Nova and they do this person, that person, because I think it makes them lit by association. And in the beginning, just like the $50, I'm like, come on, I got you. I'm a publicist because I wanted the money,
yeah.
You know? And now, not now, but like later in life, I realized that like all money wasn't good money. And I cared more about my reputation than like trying to make some bread. and so again, like most publicists, they'll charge you, not necessarily based on the placements. I think back in the day, there was a way that people would factor that in. Like they would say like how much each outlet, like what the value was in it, like this was valued at this. And the way they would create the value is by seeing how much they charge for an ad. So like, let's say you guys charge $100 for a 15 second ad and I got somebody a 10 minute interview on your thing, I would charge, $400 for every minute.
So, all right. So, what's the going rate for publicists now? I believe you said like $5,000 to $2,500 a month?
Yeah. So, I think most people on average charge $25,000 to $5,000. But again, there's some people who charge less, some people who charge more. It just really depends. And honestly, it's like a business where you make your own rate. It's like, what do you charge for ads on your podcast? Whatever you want. You know, some people charge they rent or they overhead, and that's what, all they want to make. Or some people, they think less is more. They operate with less is more mentality. Like, I'd rather get 10 clients for $1,000 and make $10,000 than trying to hustle up two clients that'll pay five. So I think it all depends. For me, yeah.
What do you charge?
It depends. I was thinking, like, should I say what I charge? But it really does just depend on, like, the level of client. Like, I have a strategy behind, like, what I charge, and I always try to factor, like, how much time is this going to take for me? Like, if it's Fashion Nova, and I know I'm going to be on the phone with you guys on a million Zoom calls now because we're in COVID, but all these Zoom calls every day, and it's taken away from working other projects, and obviously I'm going to charge more for that. If it's something like a Nick Cannon at the time, he was just doing his music stuff, so it wasn't a lot that was going on. I still charged, you know, more than what I said in that range, but it was less than, significantly less than, like, what I would have charged somebody who was taking more of my time.
So is it something that you need ongoing? Like, let's say we want to just a run for the book, right? Mm-hmm. Is it like, all right, I get a publisher for 3 months and then I'm good? Or is it like something that you just need to have, like, every month indefinitely?
I think that's depending upon, like, what your vision is, right? Mm-hmm. So if your goal is only to promote this book, then I would say do a 3 month campaign for the book. But if your thing is, like, I want something long term where I want this person to be invested in my brand and I want them to bring me opportunities and I want them to find opportunities when there's nothing going on, then I would say do something ongoing. Like, for you guys and having your show, I don't know if you have a talent book or if you book it yourself, but I would say, oh yeah, you can have a publicist for the Earn Your Leisure podcast, because you guys have so many dope guests on, but how many times are people syndicating it on other platforms? Mm. And what I mean by syndicating is, like, for example, like, you can have your interview with Ryan Leslie. You can send it out, like, hey, we did an interview with Ryan Leslie. I don't know how much pickup that's gonna get, but if you had a publicist, they can say, here, they did an interview with Ryan Leslie. You did the excerpts from the interview, like Ryan Leslie on starting a business, Ryan Leslie on the first time he lost $1 million. So you're really almost doing the work for these outlets to write their stories for you guys. And then we're including photos with it. So that way, when people search Earn Your Leisure, like, you're turning more people onto the podcast. You're helping your SEO. So when they Google y'all, of course you're gonna be the first thing on Google because you're a unique name, but it just helps with all of that. And so that would be something that would be more long-term. You don't tell somebody, do that for 3 months and then stop.
So that's a lot, right? So what is it like juggling all different types of clients? Because I'm sure you have to deal with multiple different type of personalities. What's that like?
I've never done crack, but when I be seeing them in the movies and they be doing all that, I'm like, I can relate to that shit. I've never done it, though. It was like that. Now, like I mentioned, I have a handful of clients now. I'm in a position where I'm very selective now. I'm like, do I like that? Like, is it gonna, like when I see them call, am I gonna be like, not this person again? Or is it gonna be somebody I'm excited to talk to? I'm gonna be calling them. And so if I don't have that level of excitement, I don't wanna do it. Cause at the one time I would have everybody. I'm like, I have 20 clients making $5 an hour. Like, when you break it all down, like, I wasn't really making no money. And I was also very big on, like, that was when Puff was like, I don't sleep. I sleep when I'm dead. Yeah. I'm like, I'm gonna sleep when I'm dead. And the nigga almost died. I'm like, oh, I need to go to sleep.
Pivot, time to pivot.
So now I'm like quality of life. So I'm going to sleep. I ain't staying up all night. Y'all can have that. And easy for me to balance them.
Yeah.
You know?
So that's part of it, right? Dealing with the clients. But they also have teams too. So what's it like dealing with their manager or their agent and now having you as a publicist?
Everything is different. I think the time I only have issues with dealing with a team member is when I'm brought on to work as someone's independent publicist for a label. So, for example, with Jeezy, now I'm his publicist because he's not with a label. But, like, for his last two albums, he was on Def Jam. Mm-hmm. And so it would be myself as his independent publicist, and then he would have a Def Jam publicist. And that would be hard. And it's always hard when you're working with a label publicist because we're all trying to show that, you know, we're worth what you're paying us, that we're needed. and there are only but so many outlets. So it's like, if I'm pitching for a Breakfast Club and they're pitching for a Breakfast, well, that's a whole other story, because then he also has a radio person too. I learned that quick.
A radio publicist?
Well, they just handle all radio, okay. Like in terms of radio ads or radio interviews or whatever. So no one touches radio but the radio person. I didn't know that, because I come from like where I had a reality client. It was just me and them. So I'm managing damn near, doing PR, marketing, everything. So that's kind of like where my mind is at. Like, I can just get it done. And I remember I pitched an interview for the Breakfast Club, and I was like, you don't ever pitch the Breakfast Club for him. Like, that's my job. And I was like, all right, my bad, you know? And so that's when it becomes difficult, when everyone's trying to figure out like their role. Even with the publicist, it's like, if I'm pitching for, let's say, Source Magazine, and he pitched for Source Magazine, it's like, and I got it. It's like, well, I talked to them first. It's like, yeah, but did you get it though? No. And it happened for me too. It's like, well, I was talking to them for 2 weeks, but they went around me and talked to somebody bigger and they got it. And so like, now that's something that he got to put on his press recap for the month. And I'm like, I ain't get that, you know, but mm-hmm. I did a lot of work. So that's hard. And it's hard. That's hard in terms of like logistically, but I think mentally for me, it's hard too, because I was always in those scenarios considered like the urban publicist. Mm. Even with Jeezy at one point, I'm like the urban publicist. After he's leaving the label, he's with a big firm, Sunshine Saks. And so it's like, well, this is my, for lack of better terms, you know, to be frank, like, this is my white publicist and this is my black publicist. So when it came to me, it was like, although I can go and get you like Us Weekly and get you in People Magazine just as well as I can get you on Breakfast Club and Source and hell, even like on Bossip, if we want to go just all layers of it, they would only send requests to the white publicists for white stuff. And then for me, it was like, get me on XXL, get me on Fader, get me on Complex. And that was also, I'm not gonna lie, that's the same scenario I had with Nick Cannon. But Nick had a million publicists. Like, he had a publicist for Wild 'N Out, a publicist for the radio show, a publicist for his acting, then here I am doing the PR for the music. And so it's like, I remember I told Nick, I'm like, hey, I got this opportunity, you can go on Larry King, you can go on The Real. He's like, I don't wanna do that. I'm like, okay, well, what do you wanna do? He's like, I want to do an interview with This Is 50. Mm. I'm like, no shade of This Is 50, but I was so happy. I'm like, a TV booking, like that's what we want. Like, we want TV bookings because there's not as many. Like, with a digital outlet, you can have a million stories on there. You can do everybody. TV, is, you know, it's only 5 days a week. There's limited slots, so you feel like you did something when you got it. And he was like, no, I don't want to do it. And I'm like, eesh, all right. You don't want to do it. I'm like, what about cooking with Snoop and Martha? He's like, nah, I don't want to cook. This Is 50. I'm Bossip. I'm like, all right. And so, because I'm the black publicist in that scenario, like, I'm not even black, I'm not gonna use race for Nick. I'm the music publicist. He just wants hip hop. He wanted to be an artist, or he's an artist. He wanted hip hop outlets. And then the person who does his general press would go out and get those TV opportunities. So those, that, it becomes hard working with other people in scenarios like that. I would much rather work alone. But I would work as a team if, you know, everyone was on the same page. Because a lot of times it's not. Because we didn't all start together. It's like, imagine you're my publicist and we work, and all of a sudden I'm like, yo, this is my other publicist now. You will kind of feel away. Yeah, like, well, what you needed him for? I wasn't doing good. And so now
you're too many chefs in the kitchen.
Yeah, it's too much. And so there's really no way for you guys to become like this, because you're always looking at him like, is he trying to replace me? You might come in with like a chip like, yeah, they needed me because you couldn't do it. And so it, I don't know, it's not harmonious.
Who needs a publicist? Like, because it's like, traditionally you would think, all right, an actor, actress, musician. But now, like I said, you got mortgage brokers that's looking at publicists and financial podcasts. It's like, I think the landscape has changed because of social media. Who's really made anybody can be a celebrity on social media. Like, you can be a celebrity chef.
Can they be?
Huh?
Can they, though? I mean, you could put celebrity in front of it, but I'm like,
I think so.
Really? Like, what, define what celebrity means?
Well,
like,
celebrity as far as famous. Right, so it's like when people actually could recognize a person and add value, and I actually think that's a good thing, because I always felt, especially as I get older, it's like, why is a musician a celebrity? Because he's good poet. What kind of value is he really adding? Some add value, but a mortgage broker is probably way more valuable. We should probably celebrate the mortgage broker more than a rapper who's rapping about things he's never done ever in life.
Yeah,
no disrespect to the rappers, but it's just reality, right? It's like, even a ball player is like, okay, you can dribble a basketball, you entertain us, but what real value are you adding, right? Like, maybe a school teacher should be celebrity over a basketball player.
Or champion. Maybe champion is the word.
Champion, celebrity, yeah. Whatever.
Yeah.
But are you, and all right, so when you're saying school teacher and basketball player, are you equating that to like money earned or in terms of notoriety?
Notoriety.
So we should all know every school teacher should be a celebrity.
Absolutely.
There's too many.
Absolutely not. But every basketball player shouldn't be a celebrity either, right? But
they're
what I'm
not,
saying is
they're
that.
They're not. I got turned some down. I don't even know.
No, they are. But I'm just saying that social media, I think, has created a platform. Like we've interviewed people who have way, like I know a school teacher who has more followers than half of the NFL players.
What's she doing? OnlyFans?
No.
I'm like actually really curious. Like, what are you doing?
Nah, she became real big, but she works in Baltimore.
Okay.
And she, shout out to Val. She does like clips on. She's like a social activist, stuff like that. So Rihanna follows her. Everybody. She's been on Time Magazine. People
Red
Magazine.
Table, Red Table Talk.
Vogue. All kinds of stuff. She just became really lit online. Red Table. Everybody. Yeah. So I say that to say she probably has more press, more write up, more than. Mm-hmm. The seventh man on the Lakers.
For sure.
Yeah. Now, the seventh man on the Lakers has more money than her. Mm-hmm. But as far as the world that we're in right now, odds are somebody like that will probably get recognized more than a linebacker that is, you know, just trying to make the team for the Lions.
Right.
It's the reality of it, right? So what I'm, so the whole point is that I feel like social media has kind of leveled the playing field and has given everybody an opportunity. Not everybody can't be it, but has given everybody an opportunity to have some fame and notoriety. Mm-hmm. Whereas before, you would never, a mortgage broker would never have 80,000 people that cared about him.
Yeah, they wouldn't walk down the street on Melrose and somebody's like, yo, that's you. Yeah. Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, we went to a coffee shop and they're like, Earn Your Leisure. And I'm
so I say different. That, I say that to say, and like I said, me, that's just my own personal opinion. I'm all for it. Because I said, especially in our culture, it's out of balance. The celebrities have always, but there's no balance. Like in other cultures, it's like you CEOs are superstars. Mm-hmm. Like Elon Musk is a superstar, mm-hmm. right? Steve Jobs was a superstar. Like, so yeah, of course you have actors and actresses that are white, but they also have business leaders that are superstars and politicians that are superstars as well. Mm-hmm. For us, not so much, but it's starting to change. Angela Rye, she's a superstar, right? In the world of politics. So my whole point is, who needs a publicist now? Because it feels like it's opened up and everybody can be beneficial from that standpoint. Do you think so? Yes and no.
I mean, I feel like what you were just saying about like the teacher or people who I guess are like, you had said someone earlier too, I can't even remember, but because you were saying a lot and I was trying to hear everything. But I think like it's not, like the teacher, obviously she's a teacher, but are people following her because she's a teacher? Or are they following her because of the ancillary things that she does outside of teaching? You know what I mean? So I think when you break it all down, it's like, yeah, your career could be whatever it is, but I think people, like you build your notoriety based on like the ancillary things. So for example, the mortgage person who's a mortgage broker, people aren't, he's not 80,000 followers because he's just selling houses. Like what else is he doing? Is he doing webinars? Is he doing these IG lives? And he's like really trying to bring a community together and mobilize people? Is he posting listings all on his page and people want to look at real estate? And so it's like, you're not getting it just because of like the career, where I don't know if that was what you were trying to say at one point, which is like teachers should get more than like the basketball.
No. I'm saying like, as far as who actually needs a publicist, like, because is it just for musicians and entertainers, or is it for business people? Is it for creatives?
Like, I think it's for every industry, because every industry there's something that you can maximize on. However, I do believe some people need a publicist and some people need Jesus. Like some things it's just like, man, I can't do it. I can't figure that out for you. I'm sorry. You know, but like, for example, real estate, there's real estate magazines. You want to be on the cover of that magazine. You want your listings to be first. That's something you can get someone who does marketing or publicity for you. That's going to obviously help your business. I think anything where you can make money off of, like, yeah, you could potentially have a publicist, because it's going to bring more revenue to you. Because all PR is maximizing your exposure, and more exposure is going to bring more money. So like, if I own an ice cream truck, I want to maximize my exposure. Now, I don't know who's going to interview the ice cream guy. That might be more of a job for someone who does marketing to get him out there more. But I think definitely would agree then with your point.
So what type of struggles do we have to face if we're choosing this career, right? Like, there must be some things that have happened. I know I heard you say at one point you thought about giving this thing up, man. So what type of struggles do people face in this game?
Well, for me, it was financial struggle. I'm like, I'm giving it up because, all right, so if I worked for a PR firm, and I have my set salary, I know what I'm going to make. I have benefits. I'm going to get paid on every 2 weeks or every month or however it works for them. And so there's stability there. With me, if I don't hustle and go get clients, I ain't going to eat. And then people don't tell you, it's like you might have a client, they agree on the rate, and the retainer late. It ain't on time. Like, my retainer is due on the first of each month. I've had people been months late on a retainer where it's like, oh, I got you. It's in my accountant. It's a net 60 or it's a net 90 or a net next year. Like, it's like, I'm like, I'm a send this to collections, man. Like, what the hell, you know? And so that's part of it too, because if you don't budget correctly, it's like, what do? If your rent is due on the first and your money is coming in on the first, but it's late, are you late with the rent? Are you getting evicted? Like, what is it, you know? And so I think that's a struggle for sure. I'm reading this book right now by a very famous publicist. Her name is Terry Williams. She was like one of the first publicists. She used to represent Eddie Murphy. And even just in the beginning of the book, like, she was talking about, like, always putting her clients first, even at her own detriment, you know? Like, she was talking about, she would be out at red carpet parties and all this stuff until midnight, and then come home and she would binge eat. Mm. She'd be just in the fridge, just eating her feelings. And I'm like, damn, I can relate to that, you know? I'm not saying I'm eating my feelings, but I'm like, I'd be binge eating too, you know? Mm-hmm. And so as she continues in the book, like, speaking of struggle, it's like, this is a job where you kind of sacrifice yourself and put yourself last. Like, I'm the publicist who caters to my clients. Like, if I have a great idea, I'm like, is it for me? No, I'm gonna give this to my client. Or I'm gonna go travel with my client and do all these different cities on their tour for them. And it's okay if I don't eat, do they eat, do they do that? And so it's like, that can take a toll on you mentally if you're not strong, because mm-hmm. you don't really know your true worth. I had a client one time, it's so funny, I was almost said her name, but I had a client one time.
Yeah, but nobody's listening, don't worry.
Yeah. You know, we ain't there yet. Just 80-something podcast. Yeah, but literally, like, she wanted to cut my rate in half. And I'm like, cut it in half? And she's like, because, all right, this is what happened. She was famous and her husband were famous, and they both hired me together, and I was going to work them as a couple. Me and the husband kind of fell out because I wouldn't get involved with, like, their arguments. Like, it's like if y'all was arguing and you're like, well, who's right? Am I right or you right? If I say he's right, you're going to be mad. And if I say you're right, you might be mad. And so I was always in the middle of stuff like that. And so one day he's like, you fired. I don't want to work with you no more. And so I'm thinking, like, all right, well, I guess I'm fired, you know? And then she's like, no, I'm going to keep you. So, but remember, I'm working with both of them. When they asked me what the rate was, I gave them the rate. They decided to split the rate. So if they said this house was $10,000 and you put $5,000 and you put $5,000, the house is still $10,000 regardless if you move out or not.
Yeah.
You know, you don't just get to pay $5,000. And that's what she wanted to do. She's like, well, I'm only paying my half. Mm. And I'm like, no, the rate was the rate. And she's like, you're not even worth that rate. And at the time, sadly, I took the half because I believed I wasn't worth the rate. Mm. Because a lot of times, like, you don't see what happens before a client goes on a red carpet or before they go on an interview, like the words of affirmation you gotta instill in these people, or like all the moving parts it takes to push somebody out there to get the image that you guys see. And a lot of times people beat up on those who are closest to them. Like, I remember in the beginning, I used to have a client who would talk to me crazy. I'm like, you motherfucker, you fat mother, this heavy E. I'm like, heavy E? What? Bitch, I'll knock the shit out of you. Now, you know.
Early.
Like, you ever think about somebody respectfully. Like, in high school? Sometimes, respectfully. Literally, now I'm a completely different person. And I be wanting revenge on people, man. I remember not too long ago, I went on Facebook and tried to find somebody from high school who said something crazy that I let slide. I'm like, yo, I wish I was who I am now then. Like, yeah. What?
High school reunion might
be. Yeah, I'm like, I was trying to find them and fight. I'm like, this is ridiculous. They probably don't even remember what they said to you,
yeah.
You know? But, like, and I would take that kind of stuff because that's how I grew up. Like, my dad is, like, he's from Detroit. He's a hood kind of guy. He would talk to us like that. You motherfucker this, you motherfucker that. But that's how he was raised, too. And so in my mind, I'm like, oh, this is how people talk, yeah. You know? It wasn't until I did my own little soul searching and, you know, some therapy and stuff. But I'm like, yo, this is toxic. And it ain't even worth it. I'm getting cussed out for $50.
So in my mind, I'm thinking right now.
$50?
That's not worth it. How do you balance your personal life, right? Because it seems like you're putting your clients first, right? You, even if you have ideas, you're giving it to your clients.
This is all hindsight. I want to say, this is hindsight, guys. This is like.
Now you have work-life balance? Now I
have a great personal life. Like, the same way I said I would try to, the same way I would have to, budget my time with clients, like, okay, this client's gonna get this much time and this client's gonna get this much time. like I budget my own life in there too.
Okay.
You know, at one point, you can call me at 2 a.m. I'm like, hello, I'm always up. Now it's like 2 a.m. I'm like, nigga, no, what the fuck? So I have created boundaries. I had to learn boundaries. But I can say a lot of people start and they don't have boundaries. Like so many people, like when I listen to like these Zoom calls or these webinars, like their claim to fame is like, you know, I was working with so-and-so and I was living in my car, I was homeless, or I spent my last to go here. And I'm like, why is that the story? Like, why is that something that we should celebrate? Like, you know, like for me, it's like, yeah, I was living on a couch. We all lived on a couch. That's not the story, nigga. Like, I got off the couch, and that's what I want to talk about, like getting off of it. But I think so for so many of us, we feel like we have to struggle in order to
be validated.
Validated. I even did my first TV deal, I knew it was a fucked up deal. I knew it was fucked up. I knew like everyone was making way more than me. And I think like I executive producing a show, like a TV show, executive producer, you would think you get some checks. It was $2,000. And I'm like, what?
For the entire series?
For the $2,000.
Wow.
And I had an attorney who was experienced. I had an agent who was experienced. And what the agent told me was like, you know, you always take an L on your first deal. Like, have you ever heard that before? Like, you
yeah,
always
yeah,
take
yeah.
an L on
everybody's
the first.
Everybody's music a lot.
That's what everybody says. And we're so accustomed to thinking that way. Like, you take an L. Yeah, if I was doing this on my own, I should take an L. But nigga, this is like your 100th deal. This is you've been yeah. doing this. Like, why am I taking L's? Why am I expected to take an L on my first deal? Like, this is my project. I'm EPing it. Like, y'all want to buy it. Clearly, there's a huge budget. I've been blessed to work on different areas of television where I'm producing. I know what the producers are getting. I know what the talent is getting. I know what the marketing company is going to get when they market it. How come I'm getting less than everybody and this is my shit? You know, and so for me, I don't, one, back to your question, creating boundaries and then also being knowledgeable, like to not have to go through those struggles. Is what I try to tell people, like really ask. Like for me, I was embarrassed to ask certain questions. I remember I would go to parties and it would be like Diddy, like the most recent party before COVID, it was lit. I was at
50th?
Yep, Diddy's 50th. And Beyonce said I was hot and I'm like, yeah, I know. but it was lit because like Kobe was there, rest in peace. And Marvin Sapp was singing, all these different people in the room. And I remember I used to go to parties like that and I would, you know, spend money I didn't have to look like I was a part of the crew just to stand this close to Beyonce or this close to somebody like an L.A. Reid or whoever and not say shit. Like, I won't even ask for a photo because I'm like, in LA, you don't ask for photos. You ask for photos, it's like, you're corny. Like, you got to look like you belong. So I wouldn't ask for photos and I would act like I was supposed to be there. And really, I realized that was doing a disservice to myself. Like, if God's putting you in these rooms, like, you got to humble yourself enough to ask questions. Like, you're in here for a reason. Like, you network. Like, don't come in here and already think that, like, your shit don't stink and you the hottest thing since sliced bread because you're in the party. Like, go. Like, for me, I always see people take pictures at party. I'm like, whose number did you get? Like, what? Follow-up is gonna happen. You get a meeting set up. Like, that's more impressive to me than an Instagram feed full of celebrity images. And so all this is like stuff I just had to learn over time. So one is like knowledge and then boundaries. And I hope I answered the question because I thought about Beyonce and started rambling.
Shout out to Beyonce.
Yeah, because I'm like, this is a moment right here.
That's a moment.
Let me ask you this, to switch gears a little bit on the marketing side, because you have a book about social media.
Yeah. Let me just say something really quickly, because we saw what happened to B. Simone, and they said she plagiarized it.
Oh, yes.
I plagiarized that entire book. Not the entire book.
If you're not cheating, you're not trying.
But here's what I did. I didn't say written by me, it's curated by me. Like, you're paying for me to curate this in a way to where it's, you have a million captions. It's like, oh, you want a party caption, you want a caption with your friends, you want a caption for subliminal disc. Like, I'm curating it, adding my own things into it while still sourcing the people who I got the things from, but I ain't write it. So when they come on, I'm like, he stole my caption. I gave you credit on the last page and I said I curated it, I didn't write it. But yeah, go ahead.
There you have
Shout out to B. Simone.
PC has been given. So yeah, you have a book about social media, and I feel like social media has really changed the game, like I said before. And now marketing, I feel like whether you're an artist, whether you're a small business owner, whatever, social media is like everything, right? Mm-hmm. So you have a whole book about it, curated. Mm-hmm. What are some tips that you have for your clients, or like, how do you, like, is that part of like being a publicist as well, as far as like to help your clients understand? Because I feel like a lot of people don't really understand social media. And I actually have given a lot of tips to different people in the business world. And I'm actually thinking about being a social media consultant myself, actually.
Why not?
Why not? And I feel like people just completely don't get it. Like they might like have a great personality. They might have great content. They have the potential to make great content, but it's just a weird vibe for a lot of people. So social media, how do you handle that for people?
I don't think that's necessarily a job of a traditional publicist. Like, they're like, we do PR. That's, you have a social media manager for that, and maybe a marketing manager for the marketing stuff. But going back to what I said initially, like being with a client who had nobody else and just having to do things, I didn't really know like that wasn't the job of a publicist. And so I really like mastered my skill in those different areas to where it's like, oh shit, like I just kind of taught myself two new skills that I can monetize on differently outside of PR. Sounds like three checks, you know? And so for me, because of that, I can do it, but I don't think a traditional publicist would do it. Like, so for social media, for example, one of my clients before COVID was Fox Soul. It's like the new streaming platform from Fox.
Oh yeah. And so is that owned by Fox?
Yeah, it's owned by Fox, okay. But it's like completely black owned and ran.
It's black owned.
Sorry. You know.
Black news.
I've been watching the Twitter. And I'm like, black on this. You know, like, my friend, he's the head of Fox Soul. He's a black man, but it is under Fox.
Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. James DuBose. But so with them, like, I got that job to do social media managing for them. So when I got it, they had like maybe 400 followers on Instagram, no YouTube, nothing. And so my team and I, like, we came up with the whole how the page was gonna look. Getting the content from their platforms, editing it up, putting it up there with like dope captions, and really cross-promoting with other Instagram pages and YouTube pages and Twitter. And then when I finished, like, I had grown that Instagram page, I think it was like 60,000 followers, and the YouTube had 100,000 subscribers in a matter of 4 months. And so I don't think that's something that a typical publicist would do, but because I had to do that with other clients, it's like, oh, I could do that. Marketing. So right now I'm working on a marketing campaign for BET for Chronicles, which is a docuseries on No Limit and Rough Riders. Has nothing to do with PR. There's no press element at all. It's simply experiential in terms of marketing and like the creative campaign that I came up with.
How did you help grow the page in the YouTube page that fast?
Well, the thing about Fox Soul, there was so much content. So every day from 6 to 10, it's 4 hours, 5 days a week, there was a show on. So what is that, like 20 hours a week, I think? So with 20 hours of content, like, we would just constantly do the feed. And then in buying social ads, like through Facebook, or making sure, like, when you click other outlets that are similar, like, let's say Fox Soul could be similar to The Real or to Wendy Williams in terms of the talent. When you click a Wendy Williams video, you get a Fox Soul ad. Like, it'll be like, Fox Soul's like, what is this? Who's that? And then also what I was saying for you guys in terms of like getting excerpts of like your interviews, like, well, Ryan Leslie says this or so-and-so says that, and sending that to blogs, that's one way. Another way, or I guess a visual way of that, would be taking a clip. Like, you don't want to send someone an hour-long interview. Like, I don't have time to listen to it. So I would take a minute clip, and I would send that out to Shade Room or to Ball Alert or to Neighborhood Talk or to whoever, and they would tag us, like, this is via Fox Soul, so people will come and follow.
Did you pay for that?
No, not at all.
Oh, yeah?
And that was strategically done, because I feel like once you pay, no matter if your clip is good or not, they expect you to pay from that one. So I would send stuff all the time. Mind you, it's 5 days a week. There's stuff, 4 shows a day. I would always send stuff. They didn't post everything. But the things that they did post was stuff that was polarizing. Like, for example, now they have the show with Lisa Rae and Vivica Fox on there, whatever. So Lisa Rae's talking about Nicki Minaj. Of course they're going to post that. So what we realized is, like, we got to really go in and find things that are topical. Like, instead of just doing an interview with somebody about publicity, it's like, what question can you ask them that other people would care about if they had no idea who I was? For example, if no one had no idea who I was or no idea who you were, what would make somebody post a clip? I would then say, well, we're gonna ask a question like this. Variety magazine just did a cover, like, the state of black Hollywood. Mm-hmm. It's like, talk to us about being a black publicist in Hollywood. Or do you think these white corporations are using Black Lives Matter as a way to get more publicity, or do you think they really care from a PR perspective? So now that's something that is current and trending. People want to know about that because everyone is putting Black Lives Matter in their messaging. They don't care who I am, who you guys are, but it's the clip, it's a conversation piece that's going to get engagement on their Instagram page, which is why they're going to post it. It's like when you post a picture of yourself, you're like, if you look good, you know people gonna comment because you look good. If you don't, they're not. So you, even with like outlets, it's like, will people comment on this post? Yes or no? you know? And so I think that's something that would be a conversation piece. And then from there, I would take that post and I might go put it on the Black Startup page, or I might put it on Talk to Pops on Instagram, not necessarily the Shade Room. And that's another thing people gotta realize too, that there are micro blogs that are more important to me than the ones who have millions and millions of followers.
So it's niche, it's a niche audience.
Yeah, exactly. Like if I was gonna
promote— Like Earn Your Leisure.
Yeah, Earn Your Leisure. If I was gonna promote your podcast, I don't necessarily think I would put it on the Shade Room. Because even if it's the great content, people on there are ultimately there to be shady. They wanna have the top comment. So I'm gonna spend my money, my ad on Shade Room for them to talk about me. And talk about, oh, your shirt don't fit, or your head bald.
He shouldn't be wearing green.
It's like, nah, I don't want that. Or am I going to put it on, like, Wealth to Prosperity's Instagram page or something like that, to where people on there are only following this page because they want knowledge and information and they want to do a business. Like, for me, I DM'd you guys back in March for something. I forget what campaign I was working. I didn't get a reply, by the way.
Oh, did
but,
you?
But yeah, it's still there.
We got to talk to our publicist.
I don't know if y'all do ads, but at the time I DM'd, I'm like, yo, how much would it be for an ad on this page? Because for me, I'm like, you guys are the perfect page to monetize Black businesses or just business in general, because everybody following it wants to start a business. They want to know something about something. For example, when I did the Breakfast Club, I was on there with a hat and like a hoodie on or something. Like, I didn't even think about image. I thought I was just talking to friends. I didn't care about it. Coming on here, I'm like, hold on, let me go in the closet and get something. Because I know the audience, everyone who listens either has a business or wants to start a business.
Yeah.
And when you have a business, you want to hire a publicist. You gonna hire me and I'm on here like, you know, just slouching with my little, you know, like, yeah, whatever. You know, I'm like, let me put my best foot forward. Let me put my Louis Vuittons on. And even though I didn't know we wasn't gonna be able to see the feet, I'd have worked. You know, but nonetheless, I put
check
my
the
best
wrist,
foot
check the
forward
wrist, check the wrist.
Because I understand the audience for this platform.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people got in marketing gotta understand, the audience. Like, people advertise on places that don't even care just because of followers and numbers, not engagement or like what that audience is into.
Speaking of variety, can we talk about the coalition that you guys formed, My Publicist is Black?
Yeah.
And the representation. I mean, presence is everything, and I know there's probably a lack of Black publicists in Hollywood and probably New York as well. Why did we form the coalition? What's its purpose?
So, in 2018, I wore a jacket to Beyonce and Jay-Z's On the Run concert that said, Beyonce's publicist is Black. I wasn't trying to really send a message other than like a big fuck you to somebody who told me they wouldn't take me on they wouldn't let me take their client on as their publicist because they wanted to have white press. And because I was Black, all I could do was Black press. And I'm like, well, Beyonce's publicist is Black. And they're like, no, she's not. I'm like, no, she really is. Like, well, she probably has a white publicist too. And so I'm like, let me go look into it. And so I went and researched her publicist, Yvette Noel Shore. And she had been with Beyonce since Destiny's Child. Hmm. And before that, she was with Mariah Carey. And then she was with Prince and Adele and Jessica Simpson, and all these big names, Black and white. And I'm like, yo, this is who I need to aspire to be like. And it's like, for me, it instantly changed the narrative of what people would have you to believe. It's like, a Black publicist, you can only do urban stuff. And a white publicist can do general market stuff. This is a Black woman who has no white publicist, or she's not someone's indie publicist. She's the publicist. And she has Beyonce on Vogue. And she also knows enough about culture to have Beyonce talking to Angie Martinez or to talking to people who reach the culture and her core demographic, right? And so I put that on the jacket as like, yeah, she is Black and I'm at the concert. I didn't think I would meet her at all because there's a million people there. And I'm like, she's probably in the back chilling, whatever. But as fate would have it, my friend, Dora, she called and was like, yo, I have, my husband's in LA going to the concert. He has like these passes where like the celebrities hang out. Cause I had bought a $500 ticket.
You had the gold band.
Yeah, my ticket was gonna be up in the front, like front row. I paid for that ticket. She got me a ticket where I was further back. And at first I'm like, yo, my seat way up there. Why am I back here? But you're on the risers.
Mm-hmm.
And literally like I'm standing with Kim Kardashian and Kris Jenner and all these different people. And then here comes Beyonce's publicist, Yvette Noel Shore. And so she sees the jacket. I didn't even know that June Ambrose had already taken a picture of it and sent it to her, so she was looking for me. And we took a picture, and she's like, here, take my number down. I'm going to send you the picture. I'm like, all right, cool. Send me the picture. I didn't think I'd ever talk to the woman again. I'm like, you busy, whatever. The very next day, she called me, and she's like, yo, I wanted to have a real conversation because I understood what you meant by the jacket. And so she started telling me all these stories about how she had been marginalized and how people would try to take Beyonce from her. And different firms were like, well, you need to go with this company. Or John Legend, I remember she was telling me a story that they convinced him to bring on another publicist to get him an outlet that they thought she couldn't get.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, they still never had gotten the outlet when they hired him. And so she's like, yeah, I have gone through it as well. And so from there, she involved a couple other people. We brought in Vanessa Anderson. She represents Issa Rae and DJ Mustard. And then Erica Tucker does Yara Shahidi. And Kendrick Sampson, he's doing all the Black Lives Matter stuff from Insecure. Mm-hmm. And Trell Thomas works with Tina Knowles. Because at first, Miss Knowles Lawson was going to have us do a panel at her theater. And that's how he was involved. Like, we're going to do a panel at Waco talking about, like, Black PR and Black publicists. And I'm like, okay, cool. And then from there, it just grew. And so then the last person she brought in was Felicia Font from Columbia. She's, like, the head of Urban there and does so many people as well. And so we just started having conversations with people. We had no intentions of, like, making it anything, really. And then it wasn't until we did, like, in COVID, we had a Zoom call. We did one in Beverly Hills, one in Harlem at Langston Hughes' house. And we did a COVID one, and we had like almost 1,000 people on there on Zoom. I'm like, damn, these people really showed up. And we saw how impactful it was. It's like, we need to do something. And so we have turned it into a nonprofit organization. Because what we realize is, like, you can, like, again, sacrificing yourself, like I said earlier, and not knowing your worth, you can devote so much time to your client and in the end have nothing. Because, for example, oh, let's do examples. So, for example, I'm representing Earn Your Leisure, and I'm doing all this press for you guys now. All this money is coming in. And y'all getting all these ads, y'all balling, y'all got the Porsches, the Bentleys, or whatever. My rate is still my rate. I'm still getting $1,000 a month. But I did all this stuff to help elevate your brand and get you so much income that when it's all said and done, like, I could potentially be broke. And there was a situation where, going back to the woman, Terry Williams, who I mentioned, her book that I'm reading, is called Black Pain. Just because we make it look good doesn't mean we're hurting. Her book, like I said, she worked with Eddie Murphy. Now she's in a nursing home. Mm. And we're like, does Eddie Murphy know? Does anybody know? Like, anybody helping this woman out? So the nonprofit started because we wanted to help her. We wanted to give her money. We wanted to take donations for her. And so we're like, well, we can help other people because there's more than one Terry out there. Imagine, like, there's so many people who probably were lit at one point and devoted so much to somebody. And then, because that's what happens, honestly, and this is the sad truth. I don't want to be long-winded. But as a Black publicist, what happens is that, like, you become discarded. Like, I can take Earn Your Leisure to new heights. Like, we're competing with Gary Vee. We're on the top of the podcast charts. I done got y'all a TV show. Now y'all on Fox with Murdoch, or Fox Soul with DuBose, whatever, you know? And you guys are so big that when before, in this moment here, how many PR people have reached out to represent you guys at this point, in this moment?
Not a lot.
Not a lot? So I take you to a point where now all the top firms are reaching out to hire y'all. And y'all think, well, shit, we want to elevate, so we got to go with the big firm. And y'all drop my Black ass. Like, I helped y'all when we was nothing, when we was, you know, trapping out this nice mansion.
Don't let that go over your head.
You know what I'm saying? I helped y'all then, you know, when it was marble on the floor. But not so much the trap. But I helped you when we were, like, on the come up, right? There's no loyalty in this industry. It's like you want to go to whoever is hot next. And so if you don't, again, budget, and how it's hard to budget because my white counterparts are getting paid double, three times what I'm getting paid. You know, like, I remember, like I said earlier, like, oh, I'm charging somebody $5,000. Like, that's so much money. And I'm like, well, I asked a white publicist who also represented someone equivalent to what I was representing. Like, how much do they pay? $15,000 a month, $20,000 a month, $100,000 a month. I'm like, God damn, what is happening? And I'm like, it's only, like, for, like, the Black people, like, I feel like, and this is only my experience, some might have a different experience, is that you expect more, but you also expect to pay less.
Yeah. That's, you know, it's, I think that's something that's across the board as far as Black businesses. It's like, stop disrespecting the entrepreneurs. Because, essentially the entrepreneurs are our future. And like I said, no matter how good a rapper is, Derek Falcon said this on our podcast, shout out to him, one of my favorite alumni, episodes 11, their career is short-lived. No matter how fast you can run on a football field, your career is short-lived. But you can do what you're doing for 60 years. Like, you could be a publicist when you're 80 years old. Man. So it's like, you, a lot of times we devalue the entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And that's whether it's a barbershop owner or whether it's a publicist. It's like, you're always trying to get a deal. And that just comes psychologically, I think, from not valuing ourselves enough. Like, we don't look at ourselves as valuable enough because a white person can come and just say anything. And it's like, oh, they're white. They got a suit on. It must be true.
Yeah. Monique said this, right? And this is so funny because I remember when Monique was doing her, like, equal pay thing, we're like, shut up, Monique. But then if you go back and listen to those interviews in today's landscape, like, literally you hear it differently. And I'm like, oh, she was saying some real shit. You know, like she was really preaching. And I think the reason why they're able to pay less, and this is a quote that she said that she brought from someone else. She said, what they understand is that what one nigga won't do, another nigga will. And so if we're all three publicists and I'm saying my rate is what this white person's rate is, but then y'all coming behind me like, I'll do it for 2,500, I got you. And then you're like, 25, I'll get you for 1,500. It's taking value away from me. No one's ever going to get that rate because there's no standard across the board. Mm-hmm. And as much as like I feel like that's counterproductive, I also understand it. If you're not getting opportunities and nobody wants to hire you, and then this person's giving you $1,500, it's like me with the $50 a placement. I knew that was cheap. I had no money. It's like I know it's wrong, but I got to eat ultimately. You know what I mean? And that's why I started my own company. It wasn't because I wanted to be a boss and entrepreneurship was in. Now it's in. Like, if you're starting a business now, there's so many resources. This is a major resource to help you start a business. I was listening to almost started a damn vending machine business because y'all said it was lucrative. I'm like, I didn't even think about that.
Yo, this is a real earner for real.
I didn't think about that, right? You know, but at that time, entrepreneurship was not cool. It was like, entrepreneurship, okay. But I did it because I no one would hire me. I was only getting internship jobs. And then when the internship was over, they would hire somebody who just came in. It wasn't like they were promoting within. And so I had to take those rates. And so I honestly feel like having like the broader conversation, like with the My Publicist is Black, or having conversations like this, it allows you to hopefully shift change in terms of those, shift change with people who are making the decisions on who to hire. Right now, as a Black publicist, send your resumes out. Everybody wants somebody Black. There are people out there saying, we want to see your team, your leadership team. Like, who's on there? Who's Black? Are they boycotting, right? Like, so many companies, they were saying, like, oh, Uber, like 1% Black, or representation, or whatever. Now is the time to be a Black publicist. You go and you apply for those jobs, get those jobs, and charge those rates.
Don't so how do, you, no how, do you, how do you feel? You asked that question before, but I'm actually interested once you bring it up. There's a lot of PR going on right now, mm-hmm. Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. whether it's Nike, whether it's every company has some form. I feel like you had to make a statement. Mm-hmm. If you didn't make a statement, it was like you was complicit with everything that was going on. So every company pretty much made a statement. Mm-hmm. Some companies like Netflix have even went further and they put $100 million into like Black owned banks. So everybody's kind of like doing their own thing. Mm-hmm. As a publicist, is this just PR spin? Is it good? Is it something that's gonna last? Like, what's your thoughts on the whole Black Lives Matter?
I think there's so many layers to it because I watched it all happening. So I think there were some companies who said nothing at first. And then when it was Blackout Tuesday, you just put a black square and you weren't responsible for leaving a caption or nothing. Companies took advantage of that. It's like, that's how we could satisfy both sides. Put the black square. It don't mean shit. You know, like, it's just a black square. The whites are cool. The blacks are cool. We perfect. No. So for me, I think people who do stuff like that, or they just put like, we stand with Black Lives Matter, almost like literally where you guys are at, like a couple weeks ago, this shit looked like Iraq. Like, houses were getting burnt, businesses was toe up, they was looting and rioting, like literally a block from where you guys are now, to the point where all businesses spray painted on their stuff like Black Lives Matter, BLM, black owned, to protect their business. And I feel like that is the same thing that I see online with companies when they put the Black Lives Matter like standard templates, like black and gray with like a fist, and it's like Black Lives Matter. I feel like they're just doing that to protect their businesses. The ones that I do like say, okay, y'all really are rocking with us, are the ones who have made an effort to commit to something. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, okay, we're like you said, Netflix, we're gonna commit $100 million to black owned banks, or we're gonna diversify our C-suite and hire more black people, or whatever. And it's funny, I'm like, y'all like black people's inventing yesterday. Like, y'all do all this shit. Like,
that's why I said, it's easy to protest when everyone's protesting. Yeah, it's easy to riot when everyone's riding.
Super easy, but I'm saying, yeah, even if they are doing it for like their own, to save face, as a black entrepreneur, a black business person, go get your money. Like, you want somebody black to stand next, it's gonna cost you for me to stand next to you and to give you that. I've never had to educate so many people on the black experience. But you know what, let me tell you something else though. I have made more money in this COVID quarantine than I've made probably in the last 5 years.
Never wasted a good crisis.
Collectively.
No, never wasted a crisis.
I'm like, y'all want to learn about the black experience? Hold on. Remit payment. Like, I'll teach you everything you need to know, you know? And so literally, I've been helping people behind the scenes. Like, I've made so much money. It's ridiculous. But I think that's also not fair to ask people to help you and not pay them either. Because literally, like in high school, did y'all learn about Black Wall Street? Did y'all learn about what happened in Tulsa? Did y'all learn about like slave? Yeah, we learned about like the slavery and the since they wanted us to learn about it, but did you go deep into it the way that we are now? No, we had to go seek that information for ourselves. So I did the work to learn this. So if you want to capitalize off the work and the time I invested in myself to learn, you got to pay. But I say all that to say, some companies, I feel like a lot of people are doing it because at this point, it's you're going to get blackballed or blacklisted if you have not mentioned or said your stance.
They're looking at you crazy.
Yeah, you're looking crazy. So that, now it's like, yeah, Black Lives Matter, whatever. But it's like, what are you doing to further that?
Yeah, we got to see. I saw Facebook, for one, it was like they're going to donate $100 million to black causes. And it's like, what does that even mean?
Yeah, but I want you to be specific.
Yeah, there's no specific. It's like, yo, where do I apply for that?
People, and then at the time, remember, what was the Minnesota bail fund or what, freedom fund or whatever, where they're bailing people out of jail right when George Floyd did pass away. They got so many donations they put on the website. We ain't taking no more. Give to other places. I'm like, I never heard nobody say we got too much money. I'm like, y'all was really just giving them guilt money. Y'all was just sending checks or whatever. And so I feel like for me, if you're going to give money, it also tells me a lot about you when I see who you gave the money to. Because it's so easy to say, I gave money to Black Lives Matter or I gave money to NAACP because they're like staples in the community. But it's like, what about these organizations that no one knows about that really could benefit from?
Yeah. No, that's that's a good point that you bring up too, because there's always, in any crisis, there's always opportunity. Mm-hmm. And it's like, not to sound callous about it, but it's just a reality. Whether it was COVID, there was a lot of opportunity in just COVID situations. A lot of people made a lot of money. And now the whole, Black Lives Matter, racial injustice situation. And I was talking to a friend of mine who works in the NBA. And he was telling me, he was like, he told all his guys, like, you know, like, look, like, there's going to be a lot of opportunity as far as, like, for businesses and business people. And it's like, because now these companies feel like they got to wash away their sins and they got to, like, spend money. And it's like they're looking for people to really give money to, whether it's a black publicist, whether it's a black teacher that can teach their staff about the racial injustices for the last 400 years, whether it's a black accountant, whether it's a black doctor. Like, they're looking to diversify, they're looking. So I say that to say, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're an investor, if you're black, this is a perfect opportunity right now to maybe reach out, make network, and make yourself known, because I've seen it firsthand where companies are actively looking to give money in a variety of different ways, whether it's inclusion programs, whether it's consultants, whether it's I've never really seen this much activity, and we don't know how long it's gonna last. So
And if you are a white company who's hiring people, black people can do more than just head up the diversity and inclusion thing. Like, literally everybody I was looking like, we hired What's somebody that? For diversity and inclusion. I'm like, well, goddamn, like imagine like going to college and learning, you're so talented at what you do, and they say, you're going to be here to talk about affirmative action and inclusion. Yeah. It's like, nigga,
it's like
I can get in the door. It's like,
I've been put in those situations where it's like, yo, hey, we're gonna talk about race in schools and you're gonna be the person. And right. I'm like, yo, I'm living it. Like I said, I'm living it. It's enough living it, don't now trying to explain it.
And the thing, you know, I always look at me, I'm a little different because how I was raised was do for self. Like, I never really was raised like on some inclusion type vibe. So I tell people all the time, like, to me, support is a lot more efficient than boycotting. Mm-hmm. So it's like you boycotting and you putting pressure on, that's good. But it's like, instead of focusing that energy, focus your energy on building something that you are a part of or you, in your community, right? So it's like, let's say there's a top PR firm who only has white people, and it's like, all right, we're gonna boycott this PR firm until they hire 3 black PR. But it's like, you already have your own PR firm,
right?
Why don't we? Because that's already a boycott. If you focus your energy and you actually give business to real black owned businesses. Yeah. Technically, you're already boycotting that because you're taking money away from where you were spending it.
Yeah. Right.
But the problem with the boycott is like the Gucci situation. Like, okay, we're going to stop wearing Gucci until they make some flip-flops that's really cool. Mm-hmm. 3 months. Okay. What's really changed?
Oh,
right?
Like, Dapper Dan is now the head of design.
Yeah.
Okay, we're back.
But it's like, if you have like a black-owned designer, then that's already taking money out of Gucci because you don't have to like force them to make, okay, we're going to come to Harlem and eat at Sylvia's.
Take a photo.
I still to this day don't fully understand why black people a lot of times are just so fascinated with being accepted by white people. It's really fascinating to me when it's like, I don't really see any other culture that has tried so hard to be accepted. It's like an abusive relationship. Like, you're hoping it's gonna change. It's really not.
I think that's systemic.
They're still beating you.
I was gonna say that's the systemic part,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's systemic. And then also, I think, you can say, oh, come and like patronize with my company versus like trying to have this big company hire black people. But I think ultimately it's like everybody doesn't want to be an entrepreneur. Everybody, and that's another thing, everyone is not built to be an entrepreneur. Some people just want to work for a company. And unfortunately for me in the way that my company is ran, I don't, my company isn't scaled the same way as like a PMK or like a Rogers and Cowan or whatever. You know what I mean? So I can understand why you might want to go work over there, because you're going to get your benefits and your salary is going to be bigger, whatever. It's a bigger office. You might have a corner suite. You ain't getting that over here, you know? But we're going to work hard. We're going to do some things that are dope and you're going to get paid.
But let me ask you this. Hypothetically speaking, right? So you have your whole coalition of what the my publicist is black.
Yeah.
You networked with. So what's stopping you guys from coming together and making your own top agency, where maybe now you can scale it?
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Because why not? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why? I was gonna piggyback on
and
that
you
question.
You have the biggest, and you have these big talents. Like, yeah. You know, like you have fucking coming with Beyonce to the table, and then you got fucking Issa over here. You can do a lot, you know,
because everything is like you look at like a Wells Fargo, like a lot of these different companies with like two names or three names, mm-hmm. is because two or three people came together at mm-hmm. one point,
yeah.
and they formed a company. Mm-hmm. That's something that black entrepreneurs don't do a lot of either.
Yeah,
small businesses stay small because they're not scaling and it's small,
right.
But three small businesses can come together and make a mid-sized mm-hmm. business or a larger business.
Yeah.
Thankfully I found the right group of people who their thinking is in alignment with what you just said. Because I had tried that early on, and we couldn't get past the name. Like, my company is not like Ernest Duke's Publicity. Like, a lot of people, they use their name, like, you know, Ray Charles Publicity or whatever. Mine is not that. I wanted it to be something that, like, if I ever wanted to leave this one day, it can still go on, and it's not, like, tied into me. Also, because my mouth is crazy, too. I might say something in this interview that's going to get me blacklisted, and now I ain't going to fuck with the company no more. It's like, no. You know, and so we couldn't get past the name. Like, the people, like, let's say the three of us were going to do it. He's like, nah, I want it to be my name first, or you want your name first. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, we ain't even got no clients yet. Like, we're talking about a name. And so it couldn't happen. And also because, like, it's so competitive. At least when it's my peers, like people were my age and we all came up around the same time, it's super competitive. But with this, my publicist is black, I believe I'm the youngest one on the entire thing. You know, and everyone has different levels of experience. They've been around for decades and whatever. They all do different things, but we're not competing, we're collaborating. So just like you guys have like assets over liabilities, I'm like collaboration over competition. And that's where our mindset is. And we're able to say like, you know, we should do this. But before, like, it wasn't. It was like we're too competitive because we think like of like a crabs in a barrel mentality. Like, you know, there can only be one. And I hate when people say crabs in a barrel because like crabs don't even belong in barrels. Like, no one ever questions that. It's just like, yeah, we crabs in a barrel. You know, it's like, no, like there really is so much money for everybody to eat.
It's enough for everybody.
What's your thoughts on quote unquote Black Hollywood? What's the future of it, or is it Black Atlanta now? Because you know Tyler Perry Studios,
they lied.
It's huge. What's your thoughts on it?
No, actually, you know what? Tyler Perry Studios, I think, is gonna be something that's super dope, and I see a lot of things are done there already. I've done multiple productions on his studio lot, so I don't want to speak to that. The future of Black Hollywood to me seems like, and I hope it's not just a moment, but I think people are starting to really see the value that Black people bring in terms of their experiences. Like even like with these animated series, like the guy who plays the Cleveland or whatever, he's like, I'm not gonna voice him anymore. I think somebody Black should be the voice of him. Well, I mean, you could have 20 years to say that. You know, whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, Cleveland, the guy's white?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, yeah. I never knew that. That's
he
crazy racial.
Close your eyes. He do sound.
That's very, very racist.
I can hear the melon, the lack of melanin.
That's amazing.
But I think people are making more conscious decisions like that. Okay, we need representation here. Black representation, authentic Black voices to be heard. We want to hire Black and diversify. And so I think it's an exciting time. We walked into like this pandemic, like the year's over, summer's canceled, whatever. I feel like all this stuff, although there has been some bad things that have happened and people have lost their lives, lost their homes, whatever. I think there's also good too. I think we had to kind of do like a hard reset, you know, to where like no one should want to go back out of this pandemic. Like we want to go back to normal. Like
what's
like,
normal?
Like what when I was normal? Asking about TV earlier before we filmed, I'm like, y'all still want to watch that? I don't care about that no more. Like I've been in the house. I didn't watch so much TV. Like I don't want to see nothing else. Like, you know? So like we're creating a new normal. And I think the new normal is going to include diversity and amplifying and supporting Black voices.
Yeah. I'm thinking about this. Like I'm going all the way back now. Like you started out as a publicist, but you also executive produce. Like, how did you gravitate toward that, and where did you get the skill? Is it just being on the scene and learning as you with your clients, or did you like study that?
No, so when I was working with a PR, one of the people I interned for, I didn't really intern, I'm not gonna lie. She would outsource things to me. So she would pay me, she was based in Atlanta, her name's Teresa. She would, let's say you're her client, you're in LA. She's like, can you go look after them in LA? Because I don't want to fly in. And it saves money, of course, fine, whatever. So one of those people was Keisha Cole. And so I'm like my own publicist, I have my own company. Not really a real company, I just had a logo on a website. I didn't do nothing like to like really register it, but I thought that's all I needed. So I'm thinking I'm like this big mogul type nigga, I got a company. And so she's like, can you look after my client? I'm like, sure, whatever. So I look after Keisha Cole, and at the end of us working together for that day, it was a photo shoot for a magazine. She's like, oh, what are you doing? Do you want to come back to Cleveland with me and my husband and be my assistant? And in my mind, I'm like, assistant? I'm a boss, nigga. I have a company. But I'm like, oh, wait, her publicist probably told her I was her assistant. Mm. And so she's like, well, you're an assistant. You want to work with her? You can work with me. And again, being broke, I was like, hell yeah. And so I moved to Cleveland and started working with her. And at that time, she had a reality show on BET.
Yeah.
And Keisha is somebody who you have to really speak her language in order to communicate with her. Like, there's a way to talk to her, which I think PR people, we've mastered the art of communicating with various type of people. Like, if you're an introvert, we can sit here in silence and talk really loud. If you're extroverted, we could be extra as fuck together, and we're going to get the job done, whatever. You want to talk, and we want to curse, we could do that. You want to smoke, I'm going to smoke with you, you want to do it. I'm a chameleon in that way. So I mastered the art of communicating with her, and so that production brought me on as a production assistant. Like, they paid me in addition to her, so that I can make sure she was on time and that she knew everything she had to do, and that, because if she's late, it's gonna hold the whole production up. You know, if she don't come downstairs for the day, you wasted money. And from there, when it was over, I was offered a job by that production company to work as the production assistant within their company. And I'm like, I wanna be a publicist, but this is paying more money, because I was paying $800 a week. And I'm like, $800 a week versus the $50 a month, I mean, $50 a placement. I'm like, I'm gonna do the $800 a week. So I went there and I just worked my way up to that company, while simultaneously still doing publicity. Mm-hmm. So I would be working with Jackie Christie, getting her interviews, and then I would be at the production company answering phones, because I wanted that extra income and I wanted to learn. And so in that company, I went from a production assistant to a casting associate, which is like the casting assistant, to like a field producer, a segment producer, and I worked my way up to an executive producer. And one thing I would say is that, like, people, when you demonstrate like what you're good at and your strengths, people will hire you and they'll rock with you. They may not like you, but they'll call you when the money is there, because they know you can get the job done and they can trust you. And so that same guy who hired me as a production assistant is also who brought me in for Fox Soul to do that, because he now is the head of Fox Soul, James Dubose. Mm-hmm. And so it's like a testament to having good relationships and also like having a vision. Like, I knew when I was answering the phones, I'm like, I barely answer my own phone. I don't want to answer this phone. But I knew I was able to see other people in the company who were driving nice cars and they were making nice salaries, and I'm like, I want to get to that point, so I'm gonna do what I have to do so I can do what I want to do later. And that's really how it came about. And as I got more credits, other people would hire me, you know. So then I went an EP like Tammy Roman special for VH1, Tammy Ever After. And then, like I said, we got the Bonnet Chronicle show with Scripted. And then I got another show on BET Her with Queen Latifah's company, and just really like showcasing like, okay, what you're able to do. And not just saying that you can do it, which a lot of people do, like, I'm a producer, I'm a whatever. It's like, I can show you like what I've been able to do, you know? So even when I took that L and I said I got $2,000, I got booked for another job, and I made what I was supposed to make on that one. So I guess they were right, you gotta take an L on your first one. But I still don't think you had to, like, you don't have to hurt yourself or lesser your value in order to be successful. But it ended up working out for me, for sure.
So, Ernest, it's been a pleasure. One last question. The most important.
Damn, man.
The most
come
important.
On. They tired. They didn't already hit the interview already.
No.
Probably been four ads. They didn't hit that little 15-second thing four times to skip it. Like, that's what I'd be doing. And like, Bevel. Fuck out of here.
Shout out to Bevel.
Oh, the most important question.
I'm sorry.
Most important question that
wait,
I have.
Wait, no. Anchor. Shout out to Anchor.
Shout out to them,
shout
too.
Out to
yeah, shout out to them, too.
Shout out to Anchor. Good, I don't skip that one.
The good people of Spotify. How do you get verified on Instagram?
There are various ways to do it. The easiest,
asking for a friend.
The easiest. Yeah, you can ask wherever you want to ask for. I'm going to ask for my check. I think the easiest way to do it is, one, if you're like on a TV show, like companies like Viacom or VH1, they take ads out, or they do ads with Facebook, which owns Instagram. they can, there are like allotted a certain amount of people they can verify. So they'll verify you easily. Or the key is to get like write-ups that are, all right, so are you familiar with domain authorities, like the rating, like the DA rating?
No.
All right, so I wasn't at first either. So like imagine like a site like Google, they have like a domain authority of 100. I mean, so many people go there, everybody knows Google, it's like a verifiable type of thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas like plantbasedhustlers.com, they may have like a domain authority of 20. Like no one goes there, they're not getting ads, people aren't linking things back to their site or whatever. And so you have to have, I think it's like a minimum of like five articles about you on outlets that have like a domain authority of 70 or higher. So like if you get an article in like Forbes or like an article
Yahoo Finance.
Yeah, exactly. You do those, then they see you as somebody who needs to be verified. Like you are a person who these people vouch for, who know who you are, and therefore you could get verified. Or another way to do it is like, and this, you know, you have some interns or whatever, create a bunch of fake pages. Earn Your Leisure, but E-R-N, like my do mine, Earn Your Leisure, and then it's like, okay, put the same logo on there and just upload shit. Do a couple of those, and then they're gonna verify you because they feel like there is too much confusion on who the accurate one is. Like they're imposters impostering you. Or having just knowing somebody, I don't know. I don't know who that somebody is because I've seen people pay and they ain't got nothing out of it. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't get verified or nothing, they just got swindled. But I think those are the two most effective ways to do it, you know?
Okay.
You trying to get verified?
We should be verified.
You verified in the streets.
That's a fact.
I was about to say
really
that. That's first and foremost.
No, for sure.
Respectfully.
But still, obviously people like, oh, he ain't verified. You know, like
it helps.
Coochie game go up when you get verified. So I get it. Y'all want to be verified.
Allegedly.
Respectfully, honey, I
cannot confirm nor deny that.
Just saying, if the blue check can't do it, this house might get the job. Okay.
Let me show you.
Y'all gotta do a house tour on a YouTube page.
We're gonna be on an
vlog. YouTube vlog.
Y'all gotta
blog.
Do a home tour for real.
Earnest Living Tour. Episode Earn Your Leisure.
I'm here for it.
Shout out to the Earnest.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, bro. How can the people contact you? Any initiatives you want to make them aware of? Anything you have going on?
No, just drink water and get your rest. I am on Instagram at Earn Dukes, ERNDUKES, and that's kind of consistent across all platforms. I don't follow back, but I do read on my DMs. So, holla at me.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Troy, housekeeping item?
Yeah, shout out to everybody on Patreon.com. Y'all know that's our Proud to Pay program. We have some new members. I hope I get their names right. Akello is tier 5, R. Brown, and Richard, tier 4. And you
know him.
Shout out to him.
Yeah,
do you?
No.
I'm like, we don't know him yet. So shout out to them. And you know, with tier 4 and 5 members, you get access to EYL University. That is our online school, the number one business school in the world. With over 70 webinars, we got a book club, a movie club. We have the Breaking Bread session with our brother, MG, the mortgage guy, who we referenced earlier. So shout out to everybody that's been joining. And shout out to everybody that's been supporting the merch. We got some new merch on today. Shout out to Mike for getting that merch out for us just in time.
We got to get you some merch.
We probably can get you some before you leave.
Shout
out to all the earners that's been supporting that.
Yeah, and once again, you forgot the real estate Facebook, or the investment Facebook.
Oh, yes.
Facebook. EYL University is a wave. That's the whole new wave that we're on right now. So, yeah, if you're interested, click the link in our bio. Thank you guys for rocking with us. Shout out to Los Angeles. Everybody always say, like, yo, y'all don't give LA enough love when y'all come here. So we're here in LA, and we will be doing more stuff in LA. Once COVID is over, we're going to be doing events in LA. We love it out here.
Catch us on Runyon. We out there 3 times a week.
Yeah, for sure. So shout out to everybody in LA and all over the West Coast. Thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
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 Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.